He's gone against that. And I think it's wrong to think of this as a pandering to Trump or getting down on his knee to Trump. It's actually just the opposite. In the United States, the government is subservient to corporations, especially this corporation. Zuckerberg always gets what he wants out of the United States government. He sees an opportunity to get even more of what he wants out of the Trump administration, because what he wants is to be able to threaten and win in a power struggle against Lula in Brazil, who has put forth very strong regulations against all social media companies. So Zuckerberg absolutely cares more about Brazil than he does the United States. Brazil is still one of the most fervent and potentially important growth markets for Meta. He's extremely concerned that the United States be able to use its power to limit regulation in Europe as well. So what he's hoping is Trump's irascible, off-the-hook, unpredictable foreign policy, throwing sticks around the world, might help limit Europe's willingness to regulate Facebook and Brazil's willingness to regulate Facebook. This is all about opportunity, not subservience. He is hoping that, once again, the U.S. government is subservient to Facebook.
So, Mark Owen Jones, if you could respond to what Meta has said the new form of content moderation will be, this idea of community notes, which is what is operative on Elon Musk's X, and why you think this decision has been taken now and what the effect will be.
Well, I think it's very clear that the community note system, which involves basically a certain group of, in X's case, a sort of anointed fact-checkers, not fact-checkers, sort of people commenting on viral posts to determine whether it's truthful or not, is really problematic. It doesn't work. And there's a number of reasons why it doesn't work, because essentially what it's resulted in is people not correcting facts, but people just posting their opinions as fact. So what we're getting is not fact-checking or, in theory, content moderation. We're getting this relativization of truth where people just respond to some information that they disagree with politically or for some other reason and then say the opposite. And so all you're doing is getting this kind of situation where it's not even about verifiable facts anymore, but just about presenting an alternative opinion. And I think the reason, I mean, this is going to be rolled out, we're not quite sure, on Meta's platforms, but it won't work. And crucially, I think there's another point here that's very interesting. Firstly, for Zuckerberg, him abandoning this fact-checking system is going to save him money. The idea of community notes is also, in theory, going to increase engagement, which might mean more profit for Facebook. But fundamentally, what it's going to do is just actually create a space in which people are going to engage in increasingly contentious arguments. And there's a really important point we need to bear in mind here, is that community notes also implies that there's a level playing field when it comes to the kind of information that's put out there on Facebook, right? We don't know which posts are getting promoted, which posts will get community noted. We also know that, and I really want to make this point, is that sometimes this community notes thing is framed as a bottom-up form of free speech. It allows users to engage in debate. It's not about free speech. It's about the free market of speech. And the difference is that the free market of speech allows people with authority, influence, to actually have a louder voice than others, whether that's paid advertisers or Facebook's algorithms deciding which information gets promoted more and therefore community noted. And that's really important, because we know from Facebook, all this talk of free speech is misleading, because Facebook have been known through their testing to promote content that is quote unquote bad for the world, the kind of content that will make you angry or potentially laugh. So Facebook are in the business of modulating public conversations. And this community notes thing is a smokescreen to suggest that Facebook are actually permitting free speech and user-led fact-checking. It's a system that won't work, and it's a system that will just lead to increased polarization and the undermining of democracy by polluting the information space with ideological disinformation.
Professor Vaidyanathan, Zuckerberg said in his announcement Wednesday that Meta's moving its trust and safety content moderation teams out of California to Texas, a move he said would, quote, help us build trust to do this work in places where there's less concern about the bias of our teams. Now, this comes after the Elon Musk-founded companies Tesla and SpaceX changed their incorporation state from Delaware to Texas, run, of course, with Republican leadership from Senator Ted Cruz to the governor of Texas. Talk about the significance of this. And as you talk about, you know, Meta going MAGA.
Yeah, I mean, it's purely symbolic. It has no operational significance. You know, the people who work in that field, and there will be many fewer of them, that's important. But the people who work in that field, it doesn't matter where they sit, right? They're trained the same way. They have to follow the same rules. It's a very structured system for content moderation. The real question here is all of those thousands of contracted workers, many of whom were in English-speaking countries or partially English-speaking countries around the world, low-wage workers, people in places like India and the Philippines, people who were subjected to hours and hours of horrible images and videos, animal mutilation, child abuse, horrible violence. Their fate is that basically they won't have any jobs anymore, which, you know, they had horrible jobs before, but those contracts will all be canceled. The small group of domestic Facebook employees will be moved to Texas, or I'm not sure exactly what he means by that. And he may not even follow through on it, right? There's no reason to believe anything he said. No one will hold him to it. And I don't think it means much, except that it was a symbolic to the Republicans that this is some sort of candy for them. But I don't think it's going to change the Facebook experience in any significant way. What really will change the Facebook experience is the fact that Community Notes will fail, and that our Facebook and Instagram experiences will be filled with hate speech almost immediately. It's going to become deeply unpleasant. The real question is, will it become so unpleasant for advertisers that they start pushing back at Meta? And if that happens, because that's the only other countervailing power at work in this system, then there could be another correction to this policy. And I wouldn't be surprised by that. Zuckerberg has no principles on these matters, except that what is good for Facebook is good for the world. And everything he does follows from that.
So, Maria Ressa, so as Siva said, now we can anticipate that these platforms are being filled with hate speech. You've said that you will do everything possible to, quote, ensure information integrity. So tell us, how do you think individuals and independent news organizations like yours can ensure that there is a truthful fact checked information available as these sites get flooded with misinformation?
Well, it's already happened, right? Cory Doctorow coined the phrase the enshittification of the internet. And in fact, I don't know if you guys saw Shrimp Jesus on Facebook, right? AI generated crap. And Facebook says that it's going to be adding more of this. So I think the first step is to actually do what we did, which is to collaborate. The way we were able to take over the center of the Facebook information ecosystem was by creating something we called Facts First PH, a collaboration of about 150 different groups, four-layer pyramid. The bottom were 16 news organizations working together, right? So fact checks don't distribute, don't spread as fast and as far as lies laced with fear, anger, and hate. So what do? Well, you have 16 news groups doing daily fact checks, but the second layer, that's civil society groups, the church, business groups. That's the group that is essentially distribution. We called it the mesh layer. We organized ourselves so that every person in these groups will share one fact check every day, but will share it with emotion. The third layer were academic partners of ours. We gave a pipeline of the fact checks of the data, and every week the academic, because again, who are the first groups under attack? Just like Mark Zuckerberg said in that quote, the journalists. So as credibility was pushing backwards because we're under constant attack, the academe came in, and every week leading up to our 2022 elections, academics came in and told people what meta-narratives were being seeded, what was going viral, which candidate was actually winning in this. And finally, the last layer is lawyers. Six different law groups, left, right, and center, that protected rule of law. You cannot have rule of law without integrity of facts. And just 3 or 4 days before our elections, we did take over the center of the Facebook information ecosystem. But here's your problem. Just in order to have facts, you have to work quadruple, four times, five times harder, and you have to collaborate more. That's an interim solution. The longer term solution, of course, is the other group that's abdicated responsibility for protecting the public are actually democratic governments who failed to build a public tech stack. This is not a free speech issue. Again, just to pull together, right? This is, in the end, Facebook is after power and money. And President Trump gave his blessing. Mark Zuckerberg now feels more comfortable. Maybe the cases won't come, right? That's what you're seeing jostling. But the second part is it will. Surveillance capitalism, unchecked, will bring Facebook more money, a company that makes more than $300 billion a year at the expense of the safety of the people on the platform.
We're going to leave it there. And of course, Mark Zuckerberg does face, as CEO of Meta, in the coming months under President Trump, the FTC case around the breakup of Meta, something he's concerned about losing billions over. Maria Ressa, founder, CEO, and executive editor of the Philippine independent news site Rappler, Nobel Peace Prize winner for her work defending free expression. Mark Owen Jones, professor at Northwestern University and Qatar, author of Digital Authoritarianism in the Middle East, Deception, Disinformation, and Social Media. And Siva Vaidyanathan, author of Anti-Social Media, How Facebook Disconnects Us and Undermines Democracy, professor at the University of Virginia. We'll link to your piece in The Guardian. Mark Zuckerberg has gone full MAGA. Next up to Los Angeles, where the devastating fires have killed at least five, destroyed 2,000 homes and buildings. More than 130,000 people have been evacuated. We'll look at what's happening, hear the story of one person who had to evacuate her whole family, and then talk about the world on fire. We'll talk about climate change. Back in 20 seconds. From On High by the late Charlie Hayden, who lived in L.A. To see our interview with him, go to democracynow.org. This is Democracy Now! I'm Mimi Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
We turn now to the wildfires scorching communities across Los Angeles in one of the city's most destructive firestorms in history. Over 100,000 people have been evacuated, more than 2,000 structures have been damaged or destroyed, and at least five people are dead, a toll that's expected to rise. One of five fires now burning started Tuesday in the Pacific Palisades neighborhood, which has now burned some 17,000 acres. The Eaton Fire burned more than 10,000 acres. Fires also prompted evacuations in the Hollywood Hills and Studio City. On Wednesday, President Biden pledged assistance from the Department of Defense. This comes as Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass and City Council are facing new scrutiny for cutting the fire department's funding by around 2% while increasing the police department budget. Nearly 400 incarcerated firefighters are among those deployed to battle the fires. Democracy Now! Reached former incarcerated firefighter Amika Mota with the Sister Warriors Freedom Coalition.
You know, and many of these people are going home tonight to cells, to fire camps. Also in Malibu, you know, we have a fire camp there that is under threat. We're really concerned about the folks there. We also know that there's a youth fire camp in Malibu. So we have a lot of young people facing some pretty terrible conditions. I can also say that we're really concerned. You know, Karen Bass has ordered an evacuation within a mile of the juvenile hall in Sylmar, where we have 100 incarcerated young people. So we're also really thinking about, you know, our currently incarcerated folks that are really vulnerable to these conditions.
To see our interview with incarcerated firefighters, you can go to democracynow.org. But right now, for more on the unprecedented fires and the role of climate change, we're joined by two guests. In Dana Point, California, about 50 miles south of L.A., John Valiant is an award-winning journalist, author of several books, including Fire Weather on the Front Lines of a Burning World, finalist for both the Pulitzer Prize and National Book Award. And in Pasadena, we're joined by Sonali Kohatkar, who evacuated with her family, her kids, and her parents from the fires. Award-winning journalist, author, and host of the radio and TV show Rising Up with Sonali. Her forthcoming book, Talking About Abolition, A Police-Free World is Possible. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Sonali, please describe what you have gone through with your family and how you escaped the fires.
Thank you so much, Amy. It's, you know, you don't expect that you're going to be in the middle of a disaster that captures international attention. And in my sleepy town of North Pasadena, I'm just two blocks from Altadena, that's precisely what has happened. We heard the winds rattling in the middle of the night, more ferocious than they'd ever been. We knew that we hadn't had rain in hundreds of days. And, you know, we have our neighborhood chat group and people started talking about whether they should up and leave. I have two elderly disabled parents and I decided that I would evacuate them before the official evacuation notice came. And already the hotels were filling up on Monday night. You know, we luckily had power, but many of our neighbors didn't. And we've been holed up at this hotel. All the hotels are packed. The convention center up the street is packed. It's just devastating. 1,100 businesses in Altadena, this community of incredible people has been utterly devastated. The speed, the ferocity with which these winds have blown the fires has been hard to imagine. I went back yesterday to get my father's medications because he's a diabetic and we couldn't find his meds at the pharmacies. And I just, you know, risked it, went home and grabbed the medication. The air was thick with smoke and ash raining down. And all I could think of was this house that I've lived in for more than half my life is still standing, but I don't know if it's going to be standing tomorrow or the day after. And, you know, my husband and I, Jim and I, went back there and we thought, you know, should we hose it down? But then it'll take water from the firefighters. The air is so bad right now that I'm sitting in the hotel lobby miles away from the fires and the internal air is hard to breathe and I'm having to use a mask. It is just unbelievable. I feel like it is a nightmare. And I have more than 12 people in my 13 people and counting now in my network of friends who have just lost their homes. And I know many more have that I'm not even aware of. Absolutely lost their homes. I saw some of them on Saturday at my birthday party, and now their homes are gone. And I can't even picture that. And I don't know if I will have a home tomorrow or the day after because these winds are not over. They're dry. They're rushing through ferociously. The firefighters are overstretched. There were fire trucks that were speeding past burning homes because they didn't have enough firefighters to stop and put out the fires there. And so some people are staying because they think that if they make a stand, they can, you know, save their homes. They're risking their lives. And it's a tempting prospect because your whole life is in your home. What do I do with my parents and my kids if I don't have a home to go back to tomorrow, the day after? I don't know. This is, it's just, it's mind-blowing. It's devastating. And no one's talking about climate change in the media. No one's talking about it. And it's just, you know, it's frustrating. So just if you believe in a God, pray for us.
So, John Valiant, could you respond to these devastating accounts that Sonali has just given us of what's happening and what she herself and her family have experienced as they've had to flee, and talk about this issue, the issue of climate change? You've spoken about this concept of wildland-urban interface and why we all have to understand what that means.
Yeah. Good morning, Nermeen. And Sonali, I'm really, really sorry to hear what you're going through. And this might be cold comfort, but I've spent the last 8 years studying fires like this and talking to people who've gone through what you're going through right now, many of whom lost their homes ultimately. We're in a situation now we're realizing, or LA residents are waking up to the fact that the climate really owns our communities. It owns our landscape. And LA County, you know, the most populous urban region in the country, is now literally at the mercy of fire. And it's at the mercy of climate. And as Sonali said, it's desperately dry there, and the winds are still blowing, and the winds control these fires. So despite the fact that California is famous for its devastating fires and has lost thousands and thousands of homes over the past 30 years to major fires just like these, it's still shocking when it happens to you. I think all of us human beings are defended against that possibility, even when it's happening all around us. And in this case, in other parts of California, now it's LA County's moment to experience this. And nothing really prepares you for the kind of psychic and physical assault of these kinds of fires. And this notion of the wildland-urban interface, known to firefighters as the WUI, is that place where the wildland, you know, the hills of the San Gabriel Mountains, San Fernando Valley, butt up against the built environment, the places where we live. And increasingly, very powerful fires are coming into cities, into urban spaces, from these wild lands. And the interface is where they meet. And what is really alarming, and it's another thing people don't talk about, is what excellent fuel the modern house is. So these wildfires are raging through forest, which is natural. Their fire is a normal part of the California landscape. But coming into these built environments, houses nowadays, the modern house has so many petroleum products in it, in terms of vinyl siding and formica counters and polyurethane stuffing and the rubber tires and the gas tanks in the garage. There are all kinds of explosive petroleum products built into our lives that we don't even think about. Look at what your shoes are made out of. When they get hot enough, they are explosively flammable. It sounds ridiculous, but it's true. And if you start looking around at your home, you'll realize that petroleum and its products are everywhere. And these are really, really flammable. And in the case of LA County right now, the other kind of sort of secret accelerant is humidity. And you're down close to 0% humidity, which is drier than kindling, drier than a matchstick. And now you have entire communities that are this dry. So the fire has to do very little work to get going. And it's got these sometimes 50, 80 mile an hour winds fanning, not just fanning the flames, but really turning them into blow torches, blowing through these communities. It's devastating energy. Firefighters can't really fight it. And that's why you have such a low percentage of containment on these massive fires that have already done colossal damage.
And yet, John, you have the media, and I'm not just talking Fox. I'm talking about all the networks. They'll talk about the perfect storm that's going on now, the high winds, extremely dry weather, especially since October. But they won't talk about climate change. The weather centers should be renamed climate change centers. But this hesitance to link it to the rest of the world and to this global heating that's happening right now and what it would mean for policy as a new president comes in, whose main motto is drill, baby, drill.
Yeah, there's a real moral cowardice in evidence at the government level, at the media level. There is no doubt about the hand-in-hand connection between our obsession with fossil fuel burning, which goes back, you know, for 200 years now, and the alterations in the climate in terms of the buildup of heat-trapping CO2 and methane. And were they, those companies and government and the governments and banks who enable them to acknowledge this, they would have to change their business model. And this kind of blind, frankly, suicidal loyalty to the status quo of keeping fossil fuels preeminent in our energy system is creating an increasingly difficult situation and unlivable situation. And I think, you know, some billionaires were impacted over the past couple of days, billionaires who encourage these policies. And yet their inclination is to blame the mayor, to blame the governor for conditions that predate either of their administrations. And so what we're living in right now is an increasingly shrill dissonance between the fact of climate change, the science of climate change, which is well understood by NOAA, by NASA, by many brave meteorologists who are on television and on the radio, and the governments who are serving really handmaidens to the petroleum industry and to the investors who are dependent on keeping them in business.
Well, Sonali, you know, if you could talk about, you're one of the few journalists who's insisted on centering the issue of the climate crisis in your reporting. So if you could talk about that and also your assessment of how the city, Los Angeles, has dealt with these devastating fires. The mayor has come under a lot of criticism. There haven't been enough firefighters, cuts to the fire department. Sonali.
Yes, thank you so much. You're right. The fact that we keep pouring money into enforcing racial capitalism, the fact that we keep pouring money into ensuring that that policing is always well funded while fire departments are not, that our resilience, our climate resilience is not funded. That's a matter of priorities. It's something I talk about in my new book, talking about abolition. But this is, you know, how we design city budgets is a blueprint for how we want to live. And so if we're pouring money into policing and taking money out of firefighting, if we're pouring money into, you know, our tax dollars going to subsidizing oil companies, but not, you know, enough subsidies to renewable energy, to electric vehicles, to climate adaptability, then we are basically reaping what we sow. And we have to be connecting these dots, because whenever you hear the sort of media coverage about these disasters, they're covered as one-offs, as isolated incidents, that here's this devastating fire. You know, we were praying for you. You'll survive. Look at the community spirit. I don't want to have to just survive. I don't want to have to rely on community spirit and my neighbors and GoFundMes to figure out, you know, where I'm going to be living next. I want my tax dollars to go towards taking care of me, my community, and all of us being together. So we need a cultural shift in our country, away from thinking individualistically about the biggest car we can drive and the ways in which we can protect ourselves without thinking about how we protect our community and how we're all in this together. So we have to fight for control over our budgets. We have to fight for control over the priorities that we make, pouring them into climate resiliency and adaptation and ending the stranglehold of fossil fuels over our country and our world. We have to change that cultural mindset, and we have to push our politicians to do the right thing. And billionaires cannot, billionaires should not exist.
We have to leave it there right now, but we will certainly continue to cover all these issues. Sonali, it is hard to wish you a happy birthday, but on your landmark birthday, we're thinking of you. Sonali Kahatkar, evacuated host of Rising Up with Sonali, and also John Valiant, the author of Fire Weather. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
If you're a Canadian Indigenous student considering many life choices about your future, Inspire can help. If you need ideas about possible education or career path options specifically for First Nations, Métis, and Inuit folks like you, join Inspire's mentorship program, Rivers to Success. It's free to register, and you'll get plenty of up-to-the-minute information about university, college, and vocational trade schools. Most importantly, again, it's free. It's free, it's free, it's free. It's online, and we have monthly events with prizes. Discover the many potential job and study opportunities that are waiting for you across Turtle Island. Register online now at rivers2success.ca. Again, that's rivers2success.ca.